Nisambulavinaka Pacific Wave listeners, Koroy Hawkins here. Because of COVID-19 lockdown here in New Zealand, we can't bring you our usual daily show, and we're really sorry about that. It stinks, and we'll be back in your feed as soon as we can, but while we can't make our usual shows, it doesn't mean we're not covering Pacific news. Each night, I talk about some of the day's stories with RNZ Night's host, Brian Crump. Here's one of our chats.
It's Koroy Hawkins joining us from his home office for another Pacific chat. Kia ora, Koroy. Welcome back to Nights.
Hello, Brian. Thanks for having me, man.
Kiribati is leaving the Pacific Islands Forum. Is this related in any way to that diplomatic spat you were talking about earlier in the week and the academics, that, well, at least one academic that the Fijians didn't want from the University of the South Pacific, and the differences of opinion over that and signs of tensions in the forum, or just a coincidence?
No, this is linked to the forum debate, separate from the university stuff. But it's the most recent indication from Kiribati, which has been one of the ones in Micronesia that we're not sure of with their status with the forum. So again, this is the spat over Palau, Marshall Islands, Federated States of Micronesia, Nauru, and Kiribati, not happy with what was supposed to be a sub-regional rotation of the top job in the forum. So the Pacific Islands Forum, obviously, the Secretary General's role is used to rotate around the region, so from Melanesia, Micronesia, Polynesia, but it's not been to Micronesia. I think it's only been there once. So they were hoping that this time around they would get that, and they didn't. And they've all raised other issues that they've had issues with in terms of the structure of the forum, the membership, and also the dominance of some of the further south countries in the region or the forum's agenda. Yeah, so this is about that. And Kiribati is one of the ones that we weren't sure of their position. Some were thinking because of their strong presence on the tuna side, they might be more leaning towards the south, but they've restated that they are for sure standing with the other Micronesian countries to leave the forum. It's a massive issue. As you know, the forum is the one sort of common uniting body at the international level that really helps Pacific countries with their voice on things like climate change, trade and negotiations at the UN, all that kind of thing. So it is quite a big problem. I had an interesting chat with former US congressman for Guam, who was telling me that there's so many ways that have been devised to split up the Pacific. So we've got the geographical, you can sort them up by geographically where they are. You can sort them up by who their colonial powers are, who they're affiliated with more strongly, and also by the tags, the lesions, as they say, in terms of the racial attributes. So there's all these ways to divide the Pacific, and the forum was that one sort of uniting ideology that we were one big blue Pacific continent and everyone was in this together. So having this split is a massive, massive deal for the Pacific at that global level.
Am I being too cynical to wonder whether some of the outside agents such as Australasia, China, Japan, the United States might like to see the forum more weak so they can get more of their own way in this massive part of the world?
It's definitely being talked about. I think even without going down that route already, the Northern Pacific countries being more closely affiliated to the United States makes them already sort of not feeling like they'll be losing out on anything for leaving the forum. So there are definitely aspects of geopolitical positioning in this. But I think the concern that has been raised by Pacific leaders is that whether there is that intention or not from outside, having a fractured region does make it easier for outside influences to divide. So if they're not united and there's no consensus on what they're doing together as a group, then it does make it easier for others outside to step in and kind of further their agenda within within individual countries in the region.
Because you're so right. This unit, we've spoken about this before, Karoi, about the thinking of, and maybe it wasn't you, but it certainly might have been Raymond Sangapodatelli, who's Samoan New Zealander I speak to when I'm talking about things South Auckland, but talking about the identity and our shared identity of being in or around the world's largest ocean as something that unifies rather than creates distance between us. There's no other part of the world that has that, and yet, it's the nations are so disparate, but they do share that common heritage and also that common threat if that ocean starts to rise.
Yes, that's right. That's definitely it. And there is a lot of strong ties in terms of the historical, traditional, cultural ties as well, with the languages that are quite interconnected, and a lot of that voyaging history and ancestry as well is sort of tied into everything that we do. And I think the other thing to talk about here, I think, is that at the people level, the Pacific is still very much connected. I feel like at the NGO level, with the churches, all of the different networks throughout the region between people-to-people relations are still quite strong. So it's just sort of at that top, upper-tier government level that things are sort of breaking down a bit.
Do you think that breakdown between maybe the northern nations and the south is irreconcilable?
They've been pretty clear on what they'd want to be able to come back in, and that's for quite a reform of the forum. One big thing with the forum is its membership. With those distinctions, initially so you've got, like, if you look at the membership, American Samoa, for instance, is not a member. Guam is not a member. They're U.S. territories, but French Polynesia is sort of now been allowed into the fold, and other various people have different sorts of observation status in the forum. So there's a lot of complexity around who's allowed in and for what reasons, and that's one of the things that we're going to look at, and said that if they were going to come back in, there needed to be a review. Because what you've got is, like, when it comes to voting, every country has like a voting power, right? And then if you have like New Zealand with its realm countries, Niue, Cook Islands, in there all voting, that's almost as if New Zealand has three votes in any decision that's going on. And obviously the Polynesian countries will stick together, and then the Melanesian bloc sort of have their thing. So it's quite within the United Front, there's quite a lot of politics going on, and I guess Micronesia's point is, if they're outvoted on everything, then their say is kind of muted in terms of what they bring to the table. It's kind of like they're in the house, as the senator put it. He said they're in the house, but not quite in the living room.
When's the next step in this?
So it takes a year for them to officially withdraw. So all of these five Micronesian countries have formally put in their withdrawal notices, and I think they have still got a few months. That was, I think, filed sort of earlier this year or last year. So they've still got a few months to work on this and hopefully sort it out. But even the language that came out of the last leaders' summit, which the Micronesian countries boycotted, was kind of, we will reform in a way that's fair to everyone. So it wasn't really, I think there was like one or two paragraphs dedicated to the issue. So I think it's kind of a little bit almost in the too hard basket as they do try and appease them. It's almost like they're trying to say, we're sorry, come back in, but we're not going to change much.
Let's turn to another cherry topic, COVID. But I want to ask a optimistic question first of COVID tonight, Karoi. Can you tell me which states have managed to avoid it in this current surge, in this Delta variant?
Yeah, some great news there. The World Health Organization says 10 Pacific states have not had any cases of COVID-19 to date since the start of the pandemic. And so they're American Samoa, Niue, Cook Islands, Pitcairn Island, Kiribati, Tokelau, the Federated States of Micronesia, Tonga, Nauru, and Tuvalu, and another five states have had no cases in the past 100 days. So, yeah, some positive news there. It's something good with the remoteness and isolation and these countries being strict with their border controls and managing to keep the virus out altogether so far.
Meanwhile, in Fiji?
Yeah, Fiji's not so good in Fiji. Still, that island we're talking about, Malolo Island, which is a popular resort island, initially had two cases on Monday. Now they've got 17, so they've sent health teams out there to try and keep the cases down there. Six deaths. Deaths are now at 459. So from that 459, 457 have been since April. So before that, they only had that few deaths from COVID. So this particular outbreak with Delta has been really, really problematic. Interestingly, though, the government is classing 271 COVID-positive patients who died but had pre-existing medical conditions that they term serious, that they're not classing in with that group. So the number of people who have died with COVID is actually much higher.
I got a text from Mark, and you might not be able to answer this, but he writes, "Hello, what's happening in Fiji? Doctor arrested in the middle of the night and not mentioned. Do you know anything about this, Karoi? Is Mark onto anything there that you've been following?"
Yes, no, we've definitely reported on this. So it's Dr. Jonne Hauer. He's been quite outspoken about the government's response. As you know, we've talked about, they're opting for full vaccination coverage over a lockdown, not as well as a lockdown in terms of managing the pandemic. So he's been one of the outspoken figures, and he was arrested during curfew, which has been quite problematic for his lawyer. His lawyer said he's condemned the arrest, saying his client was taken forcibly from his home in Nautoka. So this is a developing story, obviously. But it comes off the back after several senior political figures and human rights advocates were detained by police last month as well for criticizing the government's strategy to address the pandemic and their rejection of Itaoke Land Act, so a bill that was before Parliament. So, yeah, just police arresting people for their strong views against the government still harks back to that sort of coup culture, military sort of regime period of Fiji's history, and it's trying so hard to shake off, but it still lingers, and you see it in these instances when these cases come up. Yeah, so he's currently, police have confirmed that they're questioning him, and they have, under Fijian law, they can hold someone for 48 hours, I understand, without charge. So he's going to be there still, I think, by tomorrow, so we'll follow up on that tomorrow.
And Karoi, the cooks, the testing they've done there hasn't found any sign of the Delta infection there that might have come from New Zealanders taking advantage of the bubble that we did have with the Cook Islands?
Yeah, so far so good. So over 2,600 swabs taken the last 9 days, all have returned negative results. So they're really happy with those results. Interestingly, 2,700 passengers have left the Cook Islands since the 16th of August. And I thought it would be good to just highlight like the economic impacts of this as well. Like, they've had over a year and a half, I think, they've been without any tourists, and they've only had a couple of months of just getting some money coming into the country, and then having it shut down again is quite sad for Cook Island businesses over there who were starting to see some turnaround from months and months, like I said, over a year and a half without any visitors. So they'll be hoping that this is short and sharp as well, I bet.
You wanted to talk about beach soccer. War. Tahiti versus Japan. War? It's a bit of hyperbole going on there, Karoi, isn't there?
I thought it might be a bit ill-thought out with Japan and war in the same sentence, but they've got it's taken from a quote from the Tiki Toa, which is the one of the players within the Tahitian team. They're one of our most successful Pacific beach soccer teams. It's a small sport. Are you familiar with beach soccer, Brian?
I think I might have seen some of it on the satellite TV channel at some point. There was a lot of sand going up in the air.
Yeah, the ball's a lot lighter. You're not allowed to attack people when they're starting an overhead kick, so it's quite spectacular. And there's, I think, penalties are like free kicks from a fair play out. So it's very fast moving. Need a lot of energy to put it off. And they've reached the knockout rounds in four of the past five Beach Soccer World Cups. So they've finished fourth on home soil in 2013, beaten finalists in 2015 and 2017, and they missed out on the quarterfinals last time. So this is their return to the knockout stages, and it's been one of their toughest campaigns, according to one of the members, a 36-year-old Lee Fung-Kui, who's been at six consecutive World Cups for the Tiki Tour. So they're playing Japan, and just work out when this. I think this is actually happening tonight.
Well, it's happening tonight.
They're actually playing.
It's not part. It's separate to the Paralympics, obviously. Unless
This is up in Moscow.
So oh, Moscow. They're playing beach. Soccer in Moscow, which I think is about 500 kilometers from the nearest coastline.
It is kind of funny. They have it all over Europe. So all you need is the pitch. So they bring in the sand, obviously.
Right. And it's okay. Got to be soft. Well, there might be a beach by a river in Moscow. I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's a river that goes through Moscow. We are talking about the men's and the women's team here.
This is the men's team.
Right, okay. Yep. And they don't have to deal with any crazy uniform things that involve them having to wear tiny briefs, do they?
No, I don't think they do.
Thank heavens.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm hoping not. Yeah. So is Japan ranked higher than Tahiti?
I'm not sure what the ranking is, but based on past performances, Tahiti have done better. I think the best placement Japan has had is fourth. Tahiti's been in two finals, so I'm assuming Tahiti's a bit stronger than Japan just based on that record.
You don't know exactly when the game is, but if it's in Moscow, let's guess, and Moscow is around about 10 hours behind New Zealand, or 9 hours behind. I'm thinking that it's probably going to be sometime in the wee hours of this morning, New Zealand time, tomorrow morning.
Most likely, yeah.
You might have a result for us tomorrow, Kuroi.
Yeah, we'll definitely catch up on that.
Kuroi, thanks so much for joining us from the home office.
Thanks, Brian. Always a pleasure.
Kia ora, Kuroi.
That's our Pacific Waves chat with Knights host Brian Crump for today. We'll be back to normal programming as soon as New Zealand comes out of lockdown. Remember, you can listen to us free on Apple, Spotify, iHeart, or any podcast platform. And if you're using Apple, please leave us a rating so others can also find us. Ka kite anō.